This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The Reverend Jonathan Tremaine Thomas says he had planned on going to Ferguson, Missouri for a short-term assignment in 2014. But then he decided to move his family from Indianapolis, joined the pastoral team at Destiny Church in St. Louis, and continued to work on race and social justice issues. Jonathan Tremaine Thomas will speak on Sunday in Kalamazoo at the Northside Ministerial Alliance's 32nd Annual Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So when I read your blog, you said that you were moving to St. Louis to be, and I'm quoting, a sellout. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, obviously I'm an African-American man, and I am married to a white woman. So sometimes within our community, you can lose the proverbial black card when you marry outside of your race. So I've been accused in some circles at times of being a sellout. You know, if you really love the black community, why would you do that? But the reality is my interracial marriage has uniquely positioned me to be able to speak not only to the issues of my own community and my own experience as a black man in America, but also to understand even some of the more insensitive perspectives that maybe someone of the majority culture or another experience may have, since I'm married to a white woman who did not grow up in a black community. And so I feel like it's uniquely positioned me to be a bridge. And with that said, you know, we wanted to sell everything. When we saw the intensity of, obviously, 2014 Ferguson, which could almost single-handedly be pointed to as a catalytic moment for the protest culture that we have in America today, when just the intensity of the environment and the need for a greater measure of understanding, both within the white community and the black community and the police community and all the different sectors that are involved in this justice, the present-day justice conversation. You know, I said, you know, that's not a bad thing. I'll sell everything. We'll sell our house. We'll do whatever it takes to move into the center of the conflict and try to be agents of healing and change.
And speaking of insensitivity, you mentioned in your response there, part of what you write about in that blog post is a white classmate who wanted to touch your hair. How does that relate to moving to Ferguson and trying to address these issues head on?
Yeah, when I was in middle school, I was the only black guy in my class. Mainly I was in the academically gifted classes, and you know, I was somewhat of a curiosity because many of these classmates of mine had grown up in a predominantly white setting, and I was their first, you know, their first black friend. And so as a result, there was a friend would say, "Hey, man, what do you use on your hair? I heard that you put motor oil in your hair. I heard that's what black people do." And, you know, there was just this sense of wonder that they had that for me, I could have easily been deeply offended. But I also saw that this was the opportunity. Maybe I was the first black man whose hair they got to touch. And if I wasn't willing to be the guinea pig in that situation, you know, it struck me at 12 years old that perhaps I would be the first opportunity to dispel myths that had been passed down in their families for generations, and to actually humanize the black experience even for them in a way that would possibly change the trajectory of what they taught their own children. I feel like I was uniquely wired for this type of work even at a young age.
So obviously you're moving to the St. Louis area after the shooting death of Michael Brown, which touched off a protest in Ferguson, Missouri. As you know, we sit here and talk now at the beginning of 2018. Do you see signs that there has been some sort of improvement, that there has been progress?
Absolutely. You know, I think that we live in a culture, some people would call it a microwave culture. We want everything quickly, especially the younger kind of millennial generation, maybe those who don't necessarily have a lot of knowledge concerning how intensely painstaking and how long it takes for nations to actually mature and to be transformed, much less small cities like Ferguson. The shooting caught everyone off guard. No one was prepared for the level of unrest that came to Ferguson and came to St. Louis. And so I think there are factions of the city that said that, you know, we've been waiting for change for too long. It's taking too long. But the reality is Ferguson has shown an amazing amount of resilience. The residents there who have labored painstakingly over the last, you know, 3 years going into the fourth year now to make reforms. I think the mayor of Ferguson might be the most tested white man in government in America today. I mean, he's sat in front of angry mobs of people and been called every name in the book, but he's also taken a long and hard look at himself and the governmental structure there. And I think Ferguson has a long way to go, but there are many wonderful citizens and public servants and activists that are learning how to hear one another and move ahead.
There have been other incidents, though, since you moved to St. Louis. There was the acquittal of Officer Jason Stockley in a fatal shooting in 2011. You were quoted at that time during some of the protests that followed by St. Louis Public Radio saying people are losing hope. They're going, we've marched in the streets. We've had a civil rights movement. We've elected a black president. We've had a woman's suffrage movement. We've had all these rights movements, and then these things still happen. So what is there to do for people when they feel that they are doing things the right way, they're protesting peacefully, and yet they don't see as much progress as they want?
Well, I think the reality is that acquittal was yet another reminder of a history of injustice, not just in Missouri, but in our nation. This state in particular, the city of St. Louis, was the place where the historic Dred Scott decision happened in 1857, which said that, you know, Africans or African Americans and the descendants of the African diaspora were not humans. And the U.S. Supreme Court made that landmark decision, which then set in place, it really laid the groundwork for the Jim Crow laws of the South and so many other structural things that have historically oppressed black people. So from the shooting of Mike Brown and the conversation of the value of a black life to, again, another police action situation where it seemed, at least on the surface, it seemed pretty point blank that there was an intent to murder and then the officer got off. I think the people are just so weary from the lack of perceived justice combined with, and we know there are gray areas in some of these events that only a jury or a courtroom would have access to the documentation. But the bottom line is, from an emotional standpoint and a psychological standpoint, you have a real weariness and a real hopelessness in the American justice system, especially when you have a proven history of legislation and structures that said, you know, on the books that black people were not humans. You know, they say that only a fool does the same thing and expects different results. And I think our model for pursuing justice was what our forefathers and foremothers did in the civil rights movement, the protests, the sit-ins. And we've been doing that. I think we default to those models in the case of a perceived injustice or a real injustice. But I think we need a higher level of action and engagement, new models for pursuing justice beyond what we've done. And that's what we're seeking to find, to create, and to call people to.
So what is there to do if not protest? I mean, have you found yet the other thing, the next tool that you would use to try and get progress and advance social justice?
Well, I think one of the valuable things of the current protest movements is, you know, protest does work in measure. It gets you to the table. When people don't want to pay attention, it gets attention, and it oftentimes it does get you a seat at the table with people who you might not otherwise have an opportunity to sit down with. I think one of the things that I've noticed over the last few years is there's a void in leadership that possesses the temperament to articulate the concerns of some of the Black communities, some of the minority communities, to articulate those concerns in a way that they can be received or heard from those who may be on the other side of the table. And, you know, there's so much information, so much confusion and even frustration, I believe, on both sides of these issues that a lot of times, you know, after you've done the battles on the streets, it becomes a battle at the conference table when we need mediators who can help us lay down our weapons on both sides, whether you're talking Black and white or even Republican, Democrat, to lay down the weapons in that space and get to a place where we can really hear one another and move forward. So this is, and one of the things that keeps us from doing that is just our psychological and emotional trauma. And so I feel like we've had legislative reform and educational reform, and there are so many more judicial reforms and things that must take place. But there's something about what Dr. Joy DeGry calls post-traumatic slave syndrome. It's almost like a post-traumatic stress syndrome that not only the Black community, but I believe all of America, you know, we have this traumatic history and these events that have in many ways, I believe, mentally and even spiritually wounded all of us. And it's our wounds, our unhealed wounds, both from minority groups and majority groups, that have kept us in this somewhat cyclical war mode.
You wrote an assessment of Ferguson, which at the end explains how we can look at the power of railroads, and that tells us something about our history and also perhaps about our present and how it ties into these issues. Explain that to our audience.
Absolutely. You know, the railroads, when that technology, if you will, first emerged, it was said that, you know, the railroad has made the world smaller. And, you know, it was the taking of the goods from one region to another region. All of a sudden, there was a connectedness between places that were previously worlds apart. And interestingly enough, Ferguson was a city established as a railroad stop. And so there's still a beautiful railroad station, the Whistle Stop Cafe. Now it's a cafe that is there in the middle of Ferguson. But, you know, the railroad is a metaphor, or in my mind, it's symbolic of, you know, two different pieces of iron. They're both strong, but they're side by side. And this side by side reality is representative of unity and being able to, if we can come side by side, there's a load or a weight that we can bear together, and it can connect us to a destination that we share. You know, the reality is Black or white, Native American, even our immigrant brothers and sisters that are here now in America, ultimately, wherever America's future is, we go there together. And so we have to come alongside one another and connect even our cultures and our histories into the joy and the hope of where we could be once we get past where we've been.
So moving to the St. Louis area was obviously a big moment for you. You know, you had not just yourself to think about, but a family, including a young child. Are you happy you decided to move?
Absolutely. It's been a wonderful, wonderful city for us. You know, St. Louis has so many challenges like many other cities in our nation, but there are also so many wonderful things here that have proven really fruitful for our family. We have a wonderful zoo, and it's really a great town, a great city to raise a family in. Lots of culture, lots of free things, and so it's been a wonderful place for us.
Reverend Jonathan Tremaine Thomas is pastor at Destiny Church in St. Louis. He will speak on Sunday in Kalamazoo at the Northside Ministerial Alliance's 32nd Annual Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
More details about events in the Kalamazoo area for the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.